Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 605. Going to recap the week in NFBC Fab, talk about some recent news, some savant slash playing time information from a playing time expert, and much, much more. You can find myself on Twitter at BDentric, and my guest, as he is most weeks on the early week show, on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how are we doing, my friend?
Never call me an expert again, please.
Well, what would you like me to call you? What would you like me to call you? Because the things I can call you would probably get me taken off the air. So,
I mean, I prefer any of those. Also, analyst is preferred.
Emphasis on the slip.
Yeah. Just so we're clear. But yeah, at the end of the day, though, I hate being called an expert. I think it's the most cliche term because at the end of the day, we all really are. I mean, how many times can I say at the end of the day? Let's see, that's three now. I'll keep it going. They brought Lizardo back out. Oh my God, he's been awful. Okay, yeah, sorry.
You guys should have heard the first like 20 minutes before we recorded. He was just going full Lizardo on us. So it's good. Well, and Aaron Rodgers on a cart. So it's a fun start to the evening.
I don't care so much about that. And it's weird because Lizardo's like hitting the spots, but when he misses, he's missing really badly, and that's what's crushing him. It's just frustrating to watch. I don't know, because he's also getting a lot of help by the ump. He's getting like, every close call near the zone, he's getting the call for.
So it can be worse is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. He got bailed out big time in the first. He started off 0-2 against Kana, however you say it, Then turned around and gave up a home run to him by the end of the at-bat after starting off 0-2. And then he went on to walk the next two. Got two called strikes against Adames, one being a called strike three with a full count, which would have loaded the bases, and then proceeded to get a double play ball after that, and he got out of the first with only the one run. And then it's been a bunch of that since. Like, he loaded the bases last inning and got out of it after giving up a couple runs, but it's like he's like so many stranded batters, but also just such just terrible pitching thing. Anyway, I'm done ranting because, of course, I'm watching. We have 3 weeks left. We're actually technically less than 3 weeks in the books left now, Bubba. Yep. And two fab periods, 3 weeks, and high stress because I'm fighting for first in my main event, and that's all.
Yeah, you've made a bit of a comeback lately. Maybe not for the overall so much, but your league, you're starting to do your thing.
If I get 50 points, I did the math, 50 points a week, which is actually very doable. If I can average 50 points gained per week in the overall standings, I can get back into the top 30 and get some of that extra overall cash.
That's a pretty solid return.
But the biggest takeaway is I could still lose my league, but I feel very confident in cashing. Fourth place is 9 points out, so it would take a big collapse for me to lose 9 points, I think.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, it's crazy in the 12s that I'm in, and even in some of the DCs, it's just there's still a lot of movement every day. It's very, very interesting to watch take place, but it'll be a fun few weeks here, fun grind.
Mm-hmm. And we're still here.
Yep, we are still here banging it out. Let's talk about a couple of things here. Chris Bryant was activated off the IL kind of surprising fashion on Monday.
Like CJ Krohn type of thing, you know?
Yeah, kind like the Rockies thing. Are great at, you know, conveying their news to their beat writers, or their beat writers aren't. I don't know. I'm going to blame the Rockies on this one.
Do they have any beat writers left?
Yeah. Who wants to come? They might have got traded to LA too.
They got
and then they got waived, and now they're in Ohio.
Yeah.
But yeah, the biggest thing here, and it's something you mentioned because, well, you cover this stuff very well, called playing time. with Chris Bryant coming back, like while he was gone and then Krohn was gone and Grichuk was gone, you got all these young kids playing. And at worst, it makes it entertaining. Like Goodman's really been taken off. No one's touching our boy, the GOAT, Nolan Jones. Like, leave him alone. That's fine.
He's in tonight.
Like, but you got, like I said, you got Doyle, who's just been garbage with plays. Goodman's out there. They got Bryant penciled in at first base, which means Montero, who's been playing pretty regularly, might get the kibosh on that one. What's your thoughts on this PT situation? Because Bryant was dropped in a ton of leagues, I'm pretty positive. So you're going to be able to grab him this weekend if you want. You won't be able to use him this week, obviously, but 14 of the final 20 games are in Coors, which is always a plus. So how do you kind of see this situation shaking out?
So when it comes to the Rockies, it's a mess. And it's frustrating because tonight was a lefty, right? Goodman is a righty, and Goodman sat tonight. But I do know that Goodman is a righty. Montero usually gets the lefties. Goodman has been getting the righties, and even – I don't know. I actually meant to go back and look. I could probably do it on the fly because I always do this on the fly. But just how many lefties? I know he hasn't faced a lot of lefties. I know he's only faced two out of the last five Goodman has. But I don't know how many lefties he's actually been up to face. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, why would they sit him, though, as a righty versus the lefties? I'm confused by that.
That part. So I don't. That's why I'm saying I'm not sure how many lefties he has faced. Like, my, you know, the way the cheat sheet shows me how many lefties a player has faced out of the last five. Yeah. But I don't know. But if I haven't been tracking how many lefties he's faced since he's come up, it might have only been two for two. You know what I mean? So for me, for right now, I'm not exactly sure. That's why I say I got to check. But and I'll be able to check actually while we're talking because I'm good at that. But at the end of the day, Goodman's the one who takes the seat against lefty. Montero crushes lefties, and that's why he's in. I'm surprised Blackman's in, honestly. I think Blackman's in tonight, right? Last I looked.
Yes.
That's the one that makes no sense to me. Maybe they just need the outfielder. But if anything, you would think lefties, you would see Blackman go back to platooning. Montero, I don't know if they can get Goodman and Montero unless they put Bryant in the outfield, but maybe they don't want to risk Bryant's help because Bryant to the outfield, Montero to first base, and Blackman to the bench against a lefty would have made way more sense to me unless they're going to putting Goodman as a strong side platoon with Montero. But at the end of the day, Montero and Bouchard were the two guys that were getting playing time entering the week that were like, hey, these are guys like $1 pickups, grab them, see where it goes. Montero got the start tonight, but I don't know if I'm confident in him getting righties regularly right now. I know Bryant's going to need rest and all that, but Bryant's going to play every day or just about every day. You're going to have Blackman still factoring in against righties at the very least. But again, he's playing against lefties tonight, so that's not exactly a good sign. It's not what we want to see. So I think I think Goodman and Montero become very, very iffy. So since Goodman came up, Goodman made his debut on the 27th. That would be the 27th. He's faced two out of three lefties. So this would be the second lefty out of four that he hasn't started against. So I don't know if he was in a platoon exactly, but it's one of those things where I don't know what to think. And like you mentioned, he's a righty. So Goodman, we're watching. Montero, we're also watching because obviously one of those something's got to give between the two. Bouchard was like non-existent before, and then Doyle came back. I guess Doyle was nicked up, even though the reports weren't there for it. And so. At the end of the day, it's really Montero and Goodman might be out of spots. So, yeah, just keep – it's unfortunate because we're entering a really strong stretch of matchups for the Rockies. You know, I think I've said it on this show twice now, and I know I've tweeted it, and it's 14 out of the final 20 games are in Colorado. You want those players. And a couple guys you were probably streaming for a buck or so, and a guy like me where I've had Goodman on my team for like 2 or 3 weeks now on my 15, and he's been performing. And that's the thing, he's been performing. So yeah, I'm hoping
– Goodman's been really good.
So I'm hoping he's just getting a day of rest that happens to coincide with everything. I'm hoping.
Why would you rest him versus a lefty? I'm confused.
I don't know. Rockies
gonna Rockies, I guess.
Yeah, I mean reverse splits maybe. I don't know. Is that a thing? Because it's really not a thing.
It shouldn't be a thing, especially with that sample size. It ain't that large. He hasn't been around that long. And it's another like rookie and Jordan Wicks getting his debut in Coors. That's usually never a good thing. So.
I just think it's one of those things where I just don't understand. It's the Rockies, and I'm hoping it's a one-day thing. I know Bryant's going to get regular rest. Blackman will get rest. So these guys will still play, but which one takes the bigger hit? If I had to guess, I would say Montero, but I'm not confident in that just because we've seen them move away from Montero so quickly in the past. Even though Montero's hitting very well right now, he can easily go right back into weak side platooning and spelling the guys as needed on the infield / DH. So he's who I think is going to get someone asked me about Nolan Jones. You mentioned it. He's set and forget. He's batting third tonight with Chris Bryant back, with Blackman in, and against a lefty.
Such an amazing human being. Just a specimen.
If I win, I already decided if I win my main event, my league, I'm getting his jersey signed. I'm gonna get a signed jersey and just I'm gonna hang it. It's gonna happen. He's him and McCormick. I might get two jerseys.
Do you remember when they first called him up? He was on the team for like a week and never even played.
Yeah,
they sent him back to AAA, but then he came back up and played every day now and has 15 homers and 13 steals in 86 games. Can you imagine if he played a full season? We're talking that's almost 30-30, folks. It's we're 30-35 right there.
Like the most exciting player since Trevor Story. And that's the thing. I remember that's why it's like, I don't know. Like next year he's going to be like, he's probably going to be like sixth, seventh round pick next year, probably give or take. Mm-hmm. Maybe later.
He didn't go in the first seven rounds of our DC we started.
And I think I would like him. I'll take if he falls beyond the seventh, I think I'm taking him there. I don't know if I want to make him one of my first because the way I draft and build 15 teamers, Nolan Jones isn't a guy I want as my first three hitters. He's just the floor is too low. I know the skill set. If you're betting on skill set and cores and playing time, he has the three, check those boxes. Yeah. But I don't know, like those strikeouts have to catch up to him because he's just overly patient.
32% K rate. That's gonna get you eventually.
He's overly patient. But the reason why I'm optimistic is because it's more of a passive reasoning than it is swing and miss. There is swing and miss. He does have an above average whiff rate and above average swing and strike rate, if memory serves. So there is some swing and miss there, but those plus skills, like the plus speed and plus power,
the quality of contact's pretty solid.
And then the barrel rates, the dude averages like a 15% barrel rate for his career. I mean, small sample so far in a career, but that quality of contact and all that can really help you outproduce your underlying metrics and help elevate your BABIP when you pair it with cores. So he's going to become a guy that I think you're going to draft knowing that the road splits can maybe decline the numbers a little bit, but a guy that should still be rather solid, maybe hit closer to 250 most years than the 300 or whatever he's close to right now. But at the end of the day,
it's enticing about him. He's only 25 too. He can learn play discipline at that age.
Wasn't he also a top prospect at one point too?
Oh yeah. And the Guardians did a great job of letting him go. So yeah, they have a trend in that department.
That's the thing. When a guy and that's why I'm with you. I think when it comes to a guy cutting down swing and miss, I want a guy who has a very patient approach, a guy who's able to maybe have the ability to see a strike in a ball. You know what I mean? And I think that's what he has given the walk rates, given the lack of chase rate and all that. I think Nolan Jones has that ability. So I think if you're right, you're right. But the problem is I don't trust the Rockies to develop them. I don't trust the Rockies to develop them properly.
Well, on the bright side is, you know, let me but check. We love him. He's ARB eligible starting in 26. If he keeps crushing like this, they'll eventually have to trade him because they won't even pay him his ARB money. So we're good there. So I guess another couple years in Coors, then he'll go to a team that might be able to really help him take off in a big way. But we'll see. We thought with Nolan Jones. So, yeah, everyone, keep an eye on the Chris Bryant situation with the playing time in Coors where you might have picked up some people in Fab this week and things might be a little different when you're looking at it in the long run. Some fun with the Chicago Cubs. They called up one of their top prospects, Pete Crow Armstrong. For those of you that didn't know, the joke during the draft was his mom was the mom in Little Big League. Well, that's a meme all over Twitter again these days. So that's fun. But what I wanted to mention here is Pete Crow, since he got promoted to AAA on August 1st, was hitting 271, six homers, 10 stolen bases. Really good speed guy. Bit of power, not in the starting lineup on Monday in Coors. I'll say that much. It was lefty lefty, so maybe they said we're gonna have him in a platoon role, something to monitor. But if he's available, which he'll be in every league, Kerland, I'm kind of interested in having a guy like Pete Crow Armstrong because like Jordan Lawler hasn't really panned out in a small sample. A lot of these guys outside of Jason Dominguez, and I'd say Ronnie Mauricio's been decent. It really hasn't been great of late. Let's put it that way.
Great of late, it just rhymed.
And you don't have to, and you don't have time to wait of late when it's great, not great
either. And somebody was it Cubby Knoll, on Twitter retweeted or quote tweeted I guess Ross was mentioning playing him, suggested that he won't be an everyday player, right? So you're already limiting playing time, not being an everyday player. When you're not an everyday player, at this point of the season, you have to be elite or prove that you're gonna. Like, I understand the upsides there, but in weekly formats, I have zero interest in him. Probably if he flashes this week and plays like 4 out of 5, sure. But I don't know if we're gonna get that type of playing time out of him because look how they just treated Canario, whatever his name is. I think it was Canario. that he was up and he did nothing. And this is a guy that came up with like a lot, like was flashing in the minors, really running hot, and they just never played him. And I know Pete Carmstrong might be the bigger prospect and the bigger name, but where are they going to play him too? You start looking at this team and they might have a spot, and they should have a spot for him, but the team has just been producing as is. So I don't know. It's been weird. Ross hasn't really been, and look at Morel. Morel was like, you couldn't take him out of the lineup, and now he's barely playing. He's playing like twice a week. So it's one of those things where I don't really know what to expect of this team, but I don't know if Pete Carmstrong is going to have a regular spot.
It makes sense lineup. That he wouldn't be regular, because if they wanted him regular, they would have brought him up before the first so he could be playoff eligible. Even True. Like if he plays well now, he's still not eligible for the postseason. So it makes sense, I guess, to add as a platoon guy, maybe even as a pinch runner to steal some bags late in the game.
Defensive replacement, maybe?
Exactly. Like, because Seiya Suzuki's not coming out. Ian Happ, probably not coming out. It's Tauchman, but they're both lefties. Like, Tauchman, because he's slowed down a lot of late.
Which,
like,
knew was coming.
Yeah, it was inevitable. But he'd be the guy, I would imagine. It's just, you know, when does that happen? Maybe Tauchman or someone goes to DH, Candyman goes to third, Madrigal sits. Like, there's moving parts, which is nice, but it's just how does it all take place? We'll have to keep an eye on it, because looking at the regular starting nine, there's really nowhere for Pete Crow Armstrong right now, and that makes it kind of tricky in the grand scheme of things. So it'll be fun to watch, but I'm with Kerwin. I'm probably, like, I've been hesitant with any of these guys. Jason Dominguez was awesome, obviously, UCL injury, but I haven't really been on much of these prospects because, like I said, it's time is so limited. I don't have time to wait for them to figure it out. Like, I need to, if I'm adding a person for next week, they need to play next week. I can't wait for those situations to unfold. So that's what makes it tricky. Real quick, why I mentioned Jason Dominguez, obviously torn UCL, going to miss a lot of the start of 2024. Time will vary on that situation. For these final weeks now, Kerwin, Jason Dominguez was hitting third every day for the Yankees. He was hitting well. The team was playing well, not just because of him, but just overall playing. Like, DJ LeMay, he's all of a sudden hitting. Gleyber Torres is having a great year. Judge is doing his thing. How do you kind of see this? Is it back to Jake Bauer's time, if you have any interest there? Or how do you kind of play out the playing time that is now available with Jason Dominguez out?
It's probably going to end up being something stupid like that. Something – I don't even know if I'm interested – at this point, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what to necessarily anticipate. I'm pulling up the chart right now because, of course, why not? Why try to guess at it when you have something to look at, right? The game was postponed tonight, so we really didn't see a lineup.
There should have been a lineup out, though.
I wonder if it was out. I just missed it. Peraza was out last game. Bowers started two righties ago. Dominguez missed last game. Who got the playing time? Oswaldo Cabrera got the playing time last game against the righty. So, like, last game, Cabrera was in. That gave him two out of three. That gave him three straight righties, too. So it's one of those things where he might be platooning. So maybe he platoons with somebody or just gets run down the stretch here because the team isn't obviously not competing. So why not let Cabrera get some reps? But Oswaldo Cabrera looks like he might be in for some playing time. And Bowers could probably factor as well. But Cabrera seems like the guy that's standing out among the names that aren't everyday guys that could become everyday guys.
Yeah, I'm not actually seeing a Yankees lineup. I'm surprised. Even when there's rainouts, they usually release one in hopes of games. That's pretty telling them that they thought the game would not happen, to not even put a lineup out there on the game time. So platoon, it sounds like, from you, which means no fun for us when it comes to potential streaming situations. Shohei Ohtani, by the way, not playing again, has not played since
scratched.
Unfolded. It's just every day it's like they hope he's going to play, and then he's scratched every single day. We're almost a week into it now. So that's fun stuff. A couple
times
other...
they just let Lizardo come back for the fifth. He gave two more runs because, you know, this is why just not? One... This is like that night where they let Braxton Berrios. Wow, wrong Garrett. Sport now.
Just eat all the runs.
Just eat 11 runs in like four innings or something against Atlanta.
I want to ask you, because it's been asked in our Discord a lot, and I've had other people ask me on other shows, what's your thoughts on this Mason Miller thing? Like, he's going to pitch around 50 pitches, they've said. They just want to get some major league innings under his arm. They're not worried about longevity in the games. He came out and actually started on Monday in Houston. And through three innings now, Miller went two innings, one hit, one walk, three Ks. He threw 45 pitches. So that's kind of what you're expecting down the stretch here. I was hoping it'd be like in the fourth and fifth innings, you have a random chance at a win. But does Mason Miller interest you for the fact that he should get you strikeouts, maybe not crush your ratios, but that's about all he can offer for you?
That's exactly what you're getting him for. Nothing more, nothing less. You want Mason Miller for strikeouts and ratio help down the stretch if you don't need to chase wins. He is very team build specific because you're not getting wins. You're getting two categories out of five. And like my team could probably take that on. But I'm not chasing Ks. I'm chasing wins and saves more than anything. But the ratio help would be welcome. But yeah, it's one of those things where but it's tough because you also think about it that he's limited to one outing a week. So what, three innings at most a week? So it's very, yeah, very limited. If you're lucky, it's three innings, five Ks, and that's all you're getting. So I'm more likely to not even bother because at least with relief pitchers, you can get that while also getting them in high leverage situations where they can sneak a save or a win.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I want to ask you real quick about John Means. He's going to make his debut on Tuesday after the injury situation. So he's back. His last two rehab outings, he went five innings in both of them, faced 21 batters his last time. Over his entire rehab stint, 21 innings, nine earned runs, so 3.74 ERA, 22 strikeouts, and eight walks, which is not horrible, but not the walks you like a little less. What's your interest in a guy like John Means? The thing is, he's stretched out in theory or as close as he's going to get, but he's still coming back from a pretty serious injury. So do you have any interest in John Means going forward?
No, I just, what do you expect? I mean, again, it goes back to we don't have time to, like, if there's nobody else, if you can get him for cheap, spec on him, I guess. But what are the odds that, like, what if he's held to like a few, like four or five innings? He's not gonna be a strikeout guy, he could help with ratios. Means could maybe sneak a win in because of the good team context, but I don't really know what to expect, nor do I have expectations. I feel like Means, his value comes from being more of a compiler type anyway. And there's no real time to compile. So he's in that streamer discussion for deeper formats, but like anything shallower than 15s, I don't think there's much there for Means, honestly.
Albert Alzolay went on the IL shortly before we recorded, probably about 2 hours before we recorded, kind of a surprise. Like, where did that come from? Alzolay thing. He's been absolutely amazing. I just want to bring it up because Merriweather got the save on Sunday. Maybe that was part of it. That was Merriweather's third straight day pitching in the bullpen. You know, Leiter's had his moments. Fulmer, he's coming off the IL, so he could be someone. I think it's the Merriweather game. What kind of interest do you have there? Because Alzolay was amazing. Going to the IL for 15 days, that's almost the rest of the season when we look at this whole thing. So Merriweather should be the dude, in my opinion. What are your thoughts? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's someone else worth looking at in Chicago.
No, I think it's Merriweather. I think Merriweather getting the last opportunity kind of speaks to where they're at with him, I would think. And he has the strikeout stuff. We've seen him actually do close games in the past, for at least for a brief period. I remember chasing that and then the injury or whatever. But yeah, I think Merriweather is kind of the guy right now, and you roll with it until they prove otherwise. But at the end of the day, we'll see what happens. Because like you said, they can go, we've seen them go 15 different directions before they finally settle on a guy. So
yeah, so we'll see. But they're playing well. So I think there will be saved chances. Yes. So keep an eye on that scenario. It could be fun. Let's talk about Kirtland. Does an updated on the Patreon with Baseball Savant and playing time and different things he sees every few days or whatever, kind of some highlights, some teams and whatnot, usually some players from each team depending on what's going on. So I'm going to cherry pick from his recent article he posted on the 9th, which was Saturday, and just kind of get his thoughts on some of these players. It's a lot of the stuff we already talk about on the show. Usually we highlight some of the guys, or he tweets out. If he's tweeting things out, it's because he probably just looked them up on Savant. So just know that he's doing his research, and that's why he's got all that amazing data that he tweets out there. So I'm just going to, like I said, cherry pick it here and go through it. I'm going to start with Eury Pérez, because I saw you tweet about him. And then in your article here, you're talking about his velo down across the board. And you even said his word for word, and it's very clear he's not the same pitcher since he's kind of returned. He's not even close to that dominant pitcher he was before. Could be, you know, he's just wearing down on the season. Could be a lot of factors. When you dug in on Eury Pérez, what are you seeing there? Because as long as the Marlins are in the race, they said they're going to keep pitching him, and right now they're still in the race. I don't see them falling far enough out till the end of the season, so I think he's going to get at least three more starts out there. So what's your thoughts on Eury Pérez as a guy down the stretch here that's not, I don't know if he's an automatic anymore. You're probably starting him if you got him, but it's not as warm and fuzzy as it once was.
Yeah, because he's at what? Like, so he did 77 innings last year, and this year he's already at, 120-ish, give or take?
He's pretty much past what you'd want him to. He's at that limit right about now.
I think what we're seeing here is simply fatigue kicking in. I mean, the Nationals aren't the easiest matchup. They can be a little pesky. And the Phillies, you know, the Phillies are hitting. So, but what's the bigger concern, the velo is one thing. Maybe, again, that can be explained by fatigue, you know, new season, new career high in innings. Plus, if they're trying to make the playoffs, and if they do make the playoffs, then you have to worry about playoff innings, right? So, with that said, I'm looking at Yuri Perez, 3 walks in each of the last 2 outings, so 6 walks total to 9 strikeouts in over just about 10 innings. But we're talking back-to-back outings with 5 innings or less, back-to-back outings with 3 walks or 3 walks each. It's been rough going after the couple of good outings he had right before that. So it's weird because it's like been up and down since he returned. Because he actually has out of his six starts since returning, 3 of them have gone for less than 5 innings. One of them gone for 5 innings, and then 2 of them for 6. The 2 6 inning outings were really solid. So I still think there's a solid pitcher in there for in terms of Yuri Perez. But you start taking notice of like the walks being a thing. All of a sudden, he's not as dominant. The velo took a dip. That was the first time the velo was dipped, like it was last outing, by the way. So it's like one of those things that more so like, hey, we're making a benchmark. Like this velo dip happened. Let's see what happens next outing. And we're kind of going from there type of thing. So, yeah, that's kind of all I'm trying to do here. And sorry, now I'm trying not to forget about Woodruff, because Woodruff just walked somebody after you gave up a hit. Now there's 2 on to start the inning with no outs.
The live sweating from Kerlin really begins.
I've been so good about not like overdoing it on baseball, trying not to kill myself. But like 3 weeks left, and my team is competing, and we're talking, you know, like a big season, and in terms of like finish, and so yeah, I'm back on all eyes on baseball, and that's all I care about with every waking breath.
For sure.
They pulled Sonny Gray in the 5th. What the hell?
We don't have to go too deep on this. I just want to highlight it because we talked about Mark Vientos last week, and we were nervous because he wasn't facing righties, but now he's faced righties in 2 of the last 4 after just one of the previous 3. Are you buying into Vientos getting more regular playing time?
I don't know anymore.
He's in Monday's lineup tonight against another righty.
Yeah, that's why. So it makes him makes two out of 3, and that actually gives him 3 out of 4. But before that was like 1 out of 3, and then before yesterday it was 2 out of 4. So I'm like, what's going on here? They're not hinting towards what they want to do with him. It's aggravating. Brett Beatty's become an everyday player, even though he hasn't really done nothing to deserve it. But like, they shouldn't be giving Vientos days off right now. They should just let him play consistently, and they're not. And Siri is on the floor in pain after it looks like a hit by pitch. That's not good.
If you guys can keep track of what's going on this show by the end, you guys are smarter than I. I want to ask you about Travis Blankenhorn of the Washington Nationals. When you wrote this article, he played in 5 straight games, including versus lefties. He's hitting 4th or 5th every day for Washington. He's got 1 homer, but he's walking in 15.4% and striking out 15.4%, which is nice. And in the minors this year, he was hitting .262 with 23 home runs, no steals. But there's a lot of pop in that bat. Maybe he might have been added. I haven't even looked at the overall ad drops for the week. But is Blankenhorn a guy that was of interest to you, or maybe some more streaming in the final weeks of the season?
I think he's more in that DFS conversation. Okay. Because if you're chasing, he's batting 4th or 5th last 3 times out. He did sit against a lefty after starting against the last lefty, so maybe he's not quite getting that regular run that they might have hinted towards him getting. But regardless, he's still strong side platoon batting in the middle of the order. So that's why I'm like, that fits more of the DFS mold and or deeper leagues. If say this week, I think they had 6 out of 7 against righties, then yeah, he was a stream. He could have been a streamer this week, just given the fact that he's likely playing six games out of the 7. And that's kind of that plays up. And you know, when you're chasing some stats. So yeah, that's about it there with him. I don't want to overdo it. He's not worth that much time.
Yeah, the Nats are interesting. He said they're pesky. They do have some fantasy viability, especially in deeper formats, but especially in DFS. I've done that a lot with the Nats getting some value mini stacks, especially when Candyman was there. That was really fun, but he's obviously in Chicago. Cincinnati Reds, they've been a platoon nightmare for fantasy managers for the last couple weeks, and it only got worse on Sunday because Jonathan India came back and Joey Votto came back. They both hit home runs on Sunday, so they just like stamped their "Hey, we're back" moment real quick. If you look at roster resource, they have 5 players platooning right now. And that's obviously not the staple, but Will Benson, we've already always known that. And this just makes it even a bigger platooning situation there. Votto could be. Nick Martini's obviously, like, I'm surprised he's still playing after they picked up Bader and Renfro. You got Friedel. You got, so basically the whole outfield is in a platoon situation. And, you know, you got McClain's on the IL, which helped out a little bit, but there's a lot going on here, Curlin. How do you deal with this when it comes to, you know, fantasy? This week they don't play in Great American Small Park. Next week they do play in Great American Small Park, which is nice. Like, I dropped Will Benson this week, and we'll talk about our ad drops. And I'm like, if I can pick him up next week, I will. But also, I haven't even looked at the matchups. If it hates a lot of lefties, it's probably pointless. So what's your outlook on this red situation, which we used to love because you want every aspect of this offense, especially at home. And right now it is very, very difficult to roster some of these.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed. And that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat. But Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And yeah, and then you have Jonathan India getting back into the mix too. So it's just another factor. But like right now, Fraley's playing against every righty. De La Cruz, an everyday player. Spencer Steer is an everyday player. CES, I wonder what happens there. He has sat against two of the last four
I'd imagine him and Votto probably share.
CES might lose. He's already trending in the wrong direction if you look at his. Because the problem is they just faced back-to-back lefties Friday, Saturday. So that kind of hides CES's playing time a little bit if you don't look. Because he did play the two righties leading into the weekend. So two out of the, but he sat yesterday, Sunday against a righty, and I was with Votto back in the lineup as well as what's his face back in the lineup?
India.
Yeah. India batting seventh, Votto sixth.
They both went deep though.
They did. And of course India's not on my team anymore, because why would he be after not playing last month? But anyway, I digress. But yeah, so CES is kind of like iffy with the playing time. I would definitely keep an eye on that. I wouldn't get my hopes up there. And then you have Friedel, who's starting to lose playing time against lefties, as you mentioned, Benson. Bader's a lefty. Bader and Renfro are weak side platoon guys. Noelvi Marte with the broken nose could be a thing. Like, could be an issue. Lose that playing time there. Especially now with India back, they honestly have someone to fill in. Maybe CES can stay playing more often with Marte out or something. I don't know. Maybe they can figure that out. Spencer Steer moves to somewhere. I don't know. We'll figure it. Everything will work out is kind of what I'm getting at. But, yeah, the Martini thing is weird. The fact that he's keeping a strong side platoon.
Yeah, I figured he would be gone the second Renfro and company came and just opened up roster spots.
He did sit one of the last three against righties. So his playing time, he might be one of those guys where it's like five out of six righties. So it's already limited for being in a platoon on top of being limited. Now it's going to be he'll be the guy who gets the odd day off against a righty too. So I don't know if there's much viability there anyway. And then this week they face like three or four lefties as well. So this week's already a mess. Like for pretty much this, unless your name is De La Cruz, Spencer Steer, and maybe Jonathan India, I would say like the rest of this lineup is tough to suggest this week. So it's really a period by period, week by week basis for these guys.
Yeah, something to monitor. Two weeks of fab to really figure that one out here.
I don't have.
I really want to ask you this one because I'll give my thoughts as well. But Tyler O'Neill, you put playing time is still inconsistent. Only three of the last five right-handed pitchers, and he sat two of the last three.
And then tonight he sat against one too, I think.
Yes, he did. And this is why I wanted to ask you because I have him in a lot of leagues.
He's a drop.
I either held him or I picked him up when he first came back situation. And I have not been starting him regularly. Like I think I sat him first half of last week, and then I played him in Great American Small Park. And then it's like, it's just one of those where it's just been hit and miss situations. Whenever I sit him, he hits a home run. That's a fact. Whenever I start him, he probably sits. And that's how it seems to work. You think he's a drop. You're going full on drop Tyler O'Neill.
Format dependent, but in a 12, if you can't afford to roster a guy who's not startable. When are you ever going to feel confident starting him without an injury right now?
It's fair.
That's my thing. Cause we're talking once, like you said, one righty out of the last three and two out of the last five now. That's an issue. Like you don't. That's a guy that's like he's not in a full platoon, but it's almost like he's the fourth outfielder against righties and gets all the lefties. So I don't understand why. I don't understand why Alec Burleson needs that playing time over him. I don't understand why Richie Palacios is even getting at bats right now. But
well, O'Neill's always been in the doghouse. It feels like, and it's just more proof of it right now. Why would you not play him every day?
See what you got. I mean, you know what you got, but like, let him get those reps because he's, unless he's not part of your future, but then you're not really helping yourself with its trade value by not letting him go out there and perform. So I don't know, but yeah, I think he's closer to a drop than he is a hold in 12s, 15s. I feel like it's one of those, like you hold on to him and see what happens. But in a pinch, I can see if I had him, I would, unless I had a roster spot to burn, which I really don't right now, because I want to make sure he's not going to get you a zero in a week is the thing about O'Neill.
That's the thing. But he's got that right now, ceiling in him that most guys don't have. That's just frustrating.
But at the end of the day,
I get what you're saying. This is why it's difficult.
Why does if he only gives you three out of seven games in the week, it's better than a zero, but you're only starting that in case it's like a break glass in case of emergency type of player then. So it's
would you rather roster Chris Bryant or Tyler O'Neill?
Chris Bryant, he's gonna play. So I like O'Neill's
ceiling. Earlier though, he's gonna get his regular time off.
Sure, but he'll play five of six? 5 of 7. I don't think O'Neill's playing 5 of 7 unless there's a lot of lefties. Unless there's a lot of lefties in there. And even then, so that's why I think. And then on top of that, it goes back to Bryant has cores for 14 of those 20 final games. So it's like that's kind of the extra part in his way. Trust me, I think O'Neill's the better talent, but we're talking 3 weeks, we're talking playing time, and we're talking venues. And Bryant has more of that on his side than O'Neill, unfortunately, because I think O'Neill's the better player. And if we're drafting today, I probably don't draft either of them, but I would probably rank O'Neill ahead of them, thinking long term between the two. But at the same time, actually, I don't know, because if O'Neill enters this team next year in the same, if he's in the similar role, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. This isn't.
We have to hope he gets traded. That's the only thing that can help his fantasy value if he stays on St. Louis, because the players he's platooning with, they're not going anywhere either. So I don't see this situation changing anytime soon. That's the problem.
It's a mess.
Let's talk about Chris Taylor. This is a guy I've never been a huge fan of because he platoons a lot. He's inconsistent. He strikes out a million times. But I'll give him credit. When he's hot, he's hot. Right now, over his last 10 games, and again, he's not playing every day. You'll get to that. But he's playing pretty close to every day. But in his last 10 games, hitting .357, four doubles, two homers, three stolen bases, walking 20%. Strikeout rate's actually down to like 29%, which is big. He's locked in right now. And like I said, he can be streaky. The Dodgers offense has gotten really good over the last month compared to like kind of the off and on early on. It's probably weekly matchup dependent, but at the same time, he is facing righties. He's not like the automatic sit type situation. So what's your take on Chris Taylor right now? JD Martinez just came back. Mookie Betts just came back. So that takes two spots up for Chris Taylor, but he's still probably better than some of the other options out there.
So I would have said he's like, don't bother, but David Peralta is also dealing with injury.
He just got hurt. Yep.
And that's where, so Chris Taylor's in against a righty again tonight. But before this, like Chris Taylor only started against two of the last five righties as well. His playing time has looked more consistent because they've faced three lefties out of the last 7 days. So they've played out of the last six matchups, three have been lefties. So he started those three plus started on Sunday against a righty. So that's four out of six games that you've seen Chris Taylor in over the last six games. And then now tonight against a righty because Peralta's out. So right now the playing time is there. And like you said, he produces in bunches. I do think that just because he's facing righties doesn't mean Taylor's going to suddenly produce against righties. But also I expect Chris Taylor to be serviceable, and I have no problem starting him because obviously, like, if you need playing time, you need performance, he's kind of checking those boxes, right? And those are kind of, again, right now, you don't, all year long, when you're streaming a player, you don't need to believe in them to stream them. But right now, it's really imperative. It's really important to make sure you're getting all the play appearances you can get, and you want guys that have the playing time and the performance to match. So if you're getting both those, and Chris Taylor's going to keep, maybe he can keep that up and just be hot for another week or two, that's great. But not somebody I would go out of my way to get, but as long as there's playing time, I'll take a shot on him because he is performing. I'll give him that.
Yeah, he's performing. That's what makes it it's going to be really interesting. Let's put it that way. And I'm I think we'll recap Fab. I'm pretty sure I added him in at least one league. So we're going to roll that dice. Emmanuel Valdez of the Boston Red Sox. We saw signs of life at times with him earlier this year. Returned from the IL at the beginning of September. He's hit safely in 5 of 6 starts, games he has started in. He's hitting .333 with a home run, scored a few runs. He's filling in at second base now with Story back at shortstop. Valdez was playing shortstop earlier in the season. What kind of league or what kind of format does Valdez stand out to you? Because, like, even, you know, Nevaldi Marte, you mentioned the nose situation. McLean's gone. There's middle infield spots that might need. Heck, as much as everyone loves Ellie De La Cruz, he's super inconsistent and frustrating to roster. Like, I'd have trouble starting him with confidence these days. So what's your thoughts on Emmanuel Valdez?
You know I love him. I did the worst comp ever, like, the year. I remember this year, like, I thought he had a chance to out-earn or at least be consistent with Michael Garcia, and obviously that was way off. I just thought that there was a chance just because I was banking on some upside there, and he shows flashes, and right now he's running hot again. Now be mindful that Emmanuel Valdez is also in a platoon batting 8th or 9th when he is starting. Usually he sat against a righty yesterday. So he, even among playing, like, I think he was in the lineup tonight too, before he got scratched. But even though he's getting those reps against righties, I don't know where my thought was on that, but even though Valdez is getting that playing time right now against righties, it's still like 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6. So it's still mostly every day. And if you need an upside play, I think, that was another team, the Red Sox, I think, played 6 of 7 against righties this week. I can double check that. But he's very much a guy that, like, if you're getting 6 out of 7 games against righties, he's worth streaming. But if it's like a week where it's like 5 out of 7, like, right, okay, so this week was like 5 out of 7. But the way it works out is actually pretty perfect because you expect him to get a day off anyway. So now he won't need one against righties. So for Monday through Thursday, they have 4 games, 3 against righties, 1 against lefty. I think that's worth streaming them against in that first half of the week. Second half of the week, you might want to try to find a replacement because 2 out of 3 against righties. So, you know, he's seeing at least one over the weekend. So I think that's very much because you're not getting the volume, but it's also tough matchups in the early part of the week. But yeah, he's a guy I like. I definitely had a bid on him as a fallback for middle infield, but not a guy I'm going out of my way to get because playing time limitations. I don't have time to wait on that, and I don't have time. I can't be too picky. Streamers, I'm just, especially if you're like me, where I'm kind of like saying screw batting average and just going for play appearances to just get counting stats. I can't afford a guy like
the right
that.
Approach right now, by the way.
For me, well, it depends. Like, my batting average took a lot. Yeah. My batting average took a huge hit after those injuries, and for me, the best approach for me was to say screw batting average and just try to keep up and attack counting stats. And that's been how I've managed to crawl back into competing on the offensive side of the things for the, so it's, again, it's a very much team context type of thing.
For sure. But, this is a yes or no question. I don't want to go any deeper than this. Are you still rostering Carlos Rodon?
In 15s, yes, no? In 15s, yes, but okay. On my bench. Okay. I'm benching him. I'm not starting him.
I'm going to just narrow this down because you have a lot of different pitchers with velo up, velo down. Mm-hmm. Some of these are younger pitchers like Tanner Bibee, noticeable drop. We talked about Yuri Perez, some other guys. How concerning is the velo stuff? We know that there is concern to it, obviously. Maybe you might want to see another start, so on and so forth. How are you using that this time of year to be reactionary because we don't have time to wait type stuff? So what does the velo information do for you when it comes to start, sit, maybe add drop situations for this final stretch run?
Well, I'm more likely to not go after a pitcher who the velo took a little bit of a hit in the last time just because we're at the time of the year where, especially young guys, where they could just be tired. It also could just simply be a one start fluke thing too. So that's why it's like, you don't want to overreact, right? You don't want to, even this late in the year, you don't overreact, but like, Yuri Perez, between the recent struggles and then the velo dip, maybe you don't start him. Maybe if his next start is a tough start, maybe you think about sitting him. He doesn't become such a sure thing in my eyes. So I'm still not trying to even though you have to kind of react quickly this time of year, I'm not trying to overreact to one start no matter what, especially if I believe in a player. But it's more so, again, it's still trying to get a starting point on things because, like you mentioned, Yuri Perez gets 3 starts left. If that velocity is down again next start and the walks are still there, maybe you realize, okay, he's a sit or I drop him. Like, that's the conversation you got to start having now, you know, because at this point, anyone's droppable. I've cut, like, now that everyone's back, of course, India and Naylor are back, so it sounds bad, but I cut both those guys a month ago. And I had to do what I had to do. And looking back at it, it sucks because now I can really use them. Trust me, I could really use them. I have 8 players on my team from like the Tigers, the Royals, the A's, and stuff. Like,
hey, Tigers have one of the best matchup sets to finish the season, so I wouldn't care too much about that.
I'm holding on to McKinstry and Padu on my bench right now because they're playing every day and are playing against righties every day and then leading off batting top 2. So anyway, but yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. But my point being though, and the Royals have been actually decent too, but what I'm getting at is that we're at that time of the year where it doesn't matter where you drafted them. It hasn't mattered where you drafted them in a while, but it doesn't matter where you drafted them. It doesn't matter what they did for you a month ago. It doesn't matter who they can be. It's about what they're doing and who they are now. So although you want to be a little quick with it, the velocity stuff, to answer your question, for me is still more of a starting point because, and maybe more of a tiebreaker. Like, hey, this guy has this start, this guy has this start. Pros and cons list, you start looking at matchups and it's like everything's dead even. Oh, but this guy had a little bit of diminished velo in his last outing. Okay, I'll go the other way. So it's still not something I'm like hugely basing, like I'm not making huge, unless it's like, I'm talking like two, like Chris Sale a couple of starts ago had like a 2 mile per hour dip in his, and that was like the second out of like 3 or 4 starts where he had that 2 or 3 mile per hour dip. So like that's where it's like, oh wow, okay, there's something wrong with Chris Sale. Like that's, there's no injury news. But I think Chris Sale's actually getting his,
he just got his start pushed back. Yeah.
And then so, Kershaw's still pitching
his shoulder issues. Kershaw got his push back to Friday because of his shoulder issues. It's
and,
a mess.
And his velocity was 2 miles per hour down too. So it also depends on how big. Like I think Perez was closer to about a tick, which again is, you'll see players in a bad start or just a tired night just be off and not get that velo all the way up. So it's more like that's more of a starting point. But then like 2 miles per hour is like, okay, 1.5 to 2 is like, I feel like there's more concern for injury. And you'll notice like when a guy comes out injured in a start, if you go look at their Savant page in that start, it's usually the velos are down like 2 to 3 miles per hour. Heck, when Otani came out with the UCL, it was like it was like a 3 to 4 velo dip. So that's why there's a big difference. You have to understand not all velocity dips are created equal. And also sometimes it really is just a blip on the radar. That's why I think I even tweeted that recently. I was like, more times than not, velocity stuff is blips on the radar. But again, it's all about getting you a starting point. And at the very least, you keep this in your back of your mind entering the offseason. Like, hey, look, this guy had this little bit of diminished stuff towards the September. Was it because? And then you start looking more into it. Maybe you read an article and it explains why. And the fatigue could be the answer. And but at least you have a starting point of where to look for. Like, okay, so this is how it ended. Where can I pick up my analysis from next year? So that's why it's so important to keep up with these things through the very end, which I'm actually like 3 days behind. Lately, I've been doing it in bulk because I've just been busy.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So yeah, I just want to go over it briefly. People can check it out on the Game of the Edge Fantasy Patreon. It's a great article to keep you up to date on things. Like I said, if Curlin's tweeting out stats, he's writing his article. So check it out. It's really good stuff there.
That's so true.
Let's talk about some of the ad drops on the NFBC OCs, the 12-teamer from this past week. And it's when we get into my ad drops, I'll show you how people have completely checked out in certain formats. But the most added player this week, and I can't argue with this, Ryan Pepiot, picked up in 100 leagues, as high as 80, as low as a dollar. I'm not the only one, but I've been preaching add Pepiot. He's like my primary target if he's available this past week, and he was not available in all my leagues. That's when you know you play with some sharp, sharp people. But this is a guy that even going into the season before, like when there's before the injuries, even last year before injuries, you're like, okay, this guy's good. We want Pepiot. He came back August 19th. Two like long reliefs out of the bullpen. Now he's made 2 starts. His 2 starts, 12 innings, no runs, 6 Ks. He's done a total of 21 innings, 2 runs, 17 Ks since coming in. Gets a nice start this week and then a beautiful 2-step next week. That's what I really wanted him for. So at least 3 really great matchups, maybe 4, depending on how it lines up in the end here. Dodgers are having horrific troubles in that rotation, obviously. They got the California Penal League pitcher. They got Kershaw with the shoulder injury and many other. Sheehan's not that great. Bobby Miller is kind of washed up at the moment. There's a lot of problems in that Dodgers rotation. Pepiot is like one of the few bright spots at the moment. So I was all in on him. What's your thoughts on Ryan Pepiot?
I drafted him in my main event this year. So
that's Curlin's way of saying, and I don't roster him anymore.
No, yeah, because so I had him. I had him on a. I had him on a very short list to add off of the back when he was like getting off, coming off the IL or about to. But he was like entering the seat. He was going to enter like in a relief role. So I was like, all right, cool. I'm not that interested. But I've always liked the stuff. And he was showing like better control in spring. I was really intrigued. We all know he had the strikeout stuff. And now Pepio is kind of doing what we kind of hoped him to do when we drafted him. Dude, I look at the back of my – I drafted so well this year. I'm so upset, especially how players – I dropped JD Martinez – JD – not Martinez. I dropped JD Davis this year. Dropped him because it was the beginning of the year, and I just – he was my last pick of the draft. And I picked him just because. And I wish I held on to him because obviously he's been good. Anyway, I digress. Pepio, he has a like ridiculous – his chase rate, his O-swing is 36.7%, league average 32% basically, above average swing strike rate. The strikeouts haven't been there yet, surprisingly, considering that. So I feel like there's room for growth there. But he's not walking anyone. I love it. I do wish, he's a 3.59 Sierra guy, so obviously he's still overperforming. But he's getting the ball on the ground more than ever. He's getting a lot more swing and miss. I think he's allowing a little more contact than usual, which makes sense considering that the strikeouts aren't there, even with those metrics suggesting they should be better. So there's a lot to like with Pepio, and honestly, he's just one of those guys that. He should be next year's where he's probably gonna go in drafts. I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but I feel like that Kyle Bradish and Justin Steele. I'm not gonna comp him to those guys.
That's fair.
But I think he should be going. I think he should be going around there in early drafts, if not a little later, and work his way up to being. Because I remember drafting him. I drafted him at the end of my draft, and that was probably around pick 340, 350. So maybe like still around a pick. Maybe he's closer to pick 250, like SP5, SP6 type. Because he's going to be in this rotation next year, and he's making strides in ways that we need him to, notably in the walk rate, that we needed those walks to be better. So I think Pepio is a guy that I'm going to be happy to be in on next year. But at the same time, if you have him now, like I think what you're seeing is close to legitimate. Obviously, he's not going to be as good as he's been, but he's solid, man. I think there's a lot of legitimacy to what we see there for Pepio.
100%. Yeah, no, he's definitely a guy I'm liking for the rest of this season and very, very interested in for 2024. Michael King of the Yankees picked up on 71 leagues as high as 147, as low as a dollar. This one's interesting for two reasons. First, Yankees game got postponed on Monday. We mentioned that earlier. Clark Schmidt was supposed to have a two-step against Boston and Pittsburgh this week. Clark Schmidt now gets moved to Wednesday, it looks like. So he's skipping tomorrow's doubleheader. They're going to go with the spot starter and Rodon. So basically two spot starters. And now Clark Schmidt has a two-step next week against Toronto and Arizona. That was supposed to be Michael King's two-step next week, Toronto and Arizona. King's now pushed to Thursday against Boston from Wednesday to Thursday. So this is why we always say, kind of play for the now. Don't try to plan too far into the future. More so with like, hey, give me the rest of the season on so-and-so. We've preached that for a long time on this show. And this was just kind of a fluky one. Still good matchups. It means Michael King should get a two-step the final week of the season. And the reason why King's interesting, like we've known him to be a nice bullpen arm, like in the seventh inning, eighth inning, potential saves from time to time. He's got six saves on the season. But they have stretched him out. They being the New York Yankees. And in his last four appearances, all being starts for the Yankees, he's worked his way up to five innings in his last two starts, got up to 79 pitches in this last start. So he's probably able to go 85-90 here pretty soon. Nine Ks in his last outing against Milwaukee, a team that Jesus Lizardo couldn't get out. So that's pretty impressive. I think when we're looking at potential pitchers this late in the season, Michael King does have some legs to him. So I was interested. What was your thoughts on Michael King?
I think in our Patreon, I suggested, I was like, hey, this feels gross, but I think you could even play. I think I'm starting Michael King with more confidence than Christian Javier right now.
that's fair. That's very fair. Yes.
That's so gross. Like what are we even doing?
Christian Javier, broken man.
I don't buy the strikeouts from King considering the lack of swing and miss in the profile and lack of chasing, but he definitely doesn't walk people. I think teams haven't adjusted. I think the Milwaukee start is obviously carrying that strikeout rate, but as a starter. But with that said, his whip is below sub one over the last three starts. Again, the strikeouts have been there, but the lack of walks, he hasn't given up a home run over the last three starts. That's going to regress. But at the end of the day, he's 1.29 ERA, and his Sierra is a 2.66. His XFIP is like 2.6 or something like that, 2.69. Nice. And FIP is 0.91. So it's one of those things where it's like, very small sample, but what King's been doing has legitimacy to it in terms of the results. So I like what we're seeing there. It's like I'd rather start Michael King than Rodon or Christian Javier, a sentence I never thought I'd utter ever. And yet here's a guy that yeah, you know you're limited. I think five innings might be the ceiling, so that might be a little bit of a reason not to be overly optimistic. But at the end of the day, and you mentioned he lines up the way he lines up. If that's the case, if everything got pushed back one, he should line up for a two-step on the final week.
He should get a nice two.
But like you said, and like we've said, like we can't bank on that. You know what I mean? No. And when we talk about RFAB pickups, you'll see why I'm not making many moves because there's too much uncertainty right now.
Yeah, like I was more excited about King for the two-step next week, but we already saw how quickly that changed. That's why we're saying like 2 weeks from now.
I would still hold him. I mean, pitching. Yeah. Worth streaming right now, especially in 15s and 12s.
Him as a one starter right now is better than most options you're going to find right now.
And that's why I think that was a 12 teamer that one of our Patreons were talking about, yep. Like Michael King, or it was just one of the options. I was like, I think Javier might be the sit over King, and I feel like it's getting cute, but it's
Javier
not.
Javier in a 12 has been a drop lately.
It's just hard. It's one of those things where it's easier to tell. It's easier to do. It's one of those things where it's easier for me to do myself, but I can't suggest someone else to do it type of thing. I'm having a hard time telling you to do it.
It's tough. I get it. The third most added player this past week in NFBC OCs in 60 leagues, high as 101, as low as a dollar, prospect Jordan Lawler of the Arizona Diamondbacks. This is why it's fun. If this was 2 months ago, he would have been in every single league. Now he was picked up in 60 leagues. And is in the minors, .278 average, 20 homers, 36 stolen bases for Lawler. First three games this weekend, though, not so great. 1-for-12, 0.091 batting average, 50% K rate. Looks a little lost at the plate right now. Even talking to the Welsh on Monday on Fantasy Pros, he's like, and he's a D-back guy and he's a prospect guy. So he got the double whammy on this. He says it might be okay to drop Lawler at this point in time. Just look for 2024 when it comes to Jordan Lawler. I didn't place a bid on him anywhere. What were your thoughts?
I just don't know what to expect. Like September call-ups, I feel like everyone's so stuck on what's his face? Dominguez was the guy that he came up and he set the world ablaze, and we all knew he had that type of upside, but you don't, like, that's the exception to the rule. Lawler got 80 plate appearances at AAA. He crushed it in AAA in small sample, did very well in AA. So Lawler could easily get going, but you can't wait for someone to get going now. What you're getting with Lawler is playing time. He did steal a base already, so you know you're going to get some stolen bases. And if you're targeting playing time and you need steals, I think Lawler has a spot, but I don't think he's a guy that – I think he's someone you can – it's one of those things where he should be added and probably on someone's bench because you're guaranteed playing time and you're guaranteed stats because of that. Now, does he need to be started until he gets going? No, but – not many more players are you going to get off the waiver wire with this much upside this late in the year. So it's one of those like give and take. Like, I want him on my bench if I have room for him, but if I need a starter right now, I probably wouldn't add him. And that's Jordan Lawler I'm talking about, because I need production now and I can't wait for him to figure out MLB pitching.
That's fair. That's kind of where I'm at. I was just watching how he went this weekend. I'm like, he's not horrible by any means, but I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the time or the patience to pull this one off. A couple more here. Jose Quintana added in 54 leagues, as high as $55, as low as a dollar. He had a two-step this week. That's a big part of it. He had matchups against Arizona and Cincinnati. But we look at Quintana. He made 9 starts heading into this one. 3 ERA, 4.83 xFIP. You know, not a ton of strikeouts, but the ratios have been decent. Last two starts, 13 innings, 1 run, 9 Ks. Outside of one start, we give it 5 runs to the Braves, which we will pretty much allow anybody to do because it's the freaking Braves. All 8 other starts, 3 runs or less, 7 of those 8, 2 runs or less. Like, he's been serviceable, which is all you're looking for this time of year. Were you in on Jose Quintana?
In 15s, I have him in a few DCs.
It could be a lock, pretty much.
That's what I'm saying. In 12s, like, for the 2-start week, though, I guess. I get it. Like, if you're targeting – the problem is the Mets aren't that good, but – They can produce. So it's like, if you're targeting wins, some ratio help, I think he can offer that type of help. I just don't know how much. Like, I don't think he's much more than that. So I think it's 15s is a slam dunk. You should be starting him probably, but 12s, it's like fringe. It's almost like Kyle Gibson type of guy. You know what I mean? Like, he can be valuable. He can get you some wins, help you with ratios. Don't expect strikeouts in your typical start type of thing. But I don't know. At the end of the day, it's Jose Quintana. I'm actually surprised he's pitching this well coming out. Wasn't it thoracic outlet or whatever he came off back from?
I'm not 100%. I don't want to misspeak, but you might be right. It was something more serious than the average thing.
Something that usually won't, that usually doesn't turn out to be like him coming back and being this good isn't the usual outcome type of thing.
Yeah, that's for sure. We mentioned Jonathan India came back on Sunday, so he was picked up in 53 leagues, as high as $50, as low as a buck, went deep on Sunday. Not a whole lot of analysis there. It's pretty simple stuff. We talked Hunter Goodman, picked up in 49 leagues, as high as 30, as low as a dollar. How about this one? We know that the rumors came out this past week that Josh Jung could be returning shortly. He was picked up in 46 leagues, as high as 111, as low as a dollar. When you look at Josh Jung, beast, you know this, I know this. He's helped our fantasy teams out tremendously while he was healthy. Big, big bummer to see him go down. They're saying he could return as early as this next week. This week, as early as, is how I'm going to phrase that so nobody takes it out of context. What's your thoughts on this Josh Jung thing? Because so far in his rehab, he's been rehabbing for a while, it looks like. No, that's from 2022. There's no rehab stats here. So were you in on the early spec on Josh Jung? Because I'm still nervous, you know, a couple weeks left, returning from an injury. Like, what can we really expect?
I'm desperate for, like, a jolt in my a jolt of production.
I'll give you a jolt.
Yeah, thanks. I always take a Bubba jolt. It just sounds like a good time. Anyway, sounds like a really, actually, really, sounds like a Bubba jolt. Sounds like a dollar store energy drink.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, discount store energy drink's a great way to put that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, with that said, Jung, yeah. So he's a guy that I got. I'll just get out of my way. I made one move this week. We'll talk about the strategy behind it. But I made one move this week, and he was at the top of my queue for a dollar, and I got him. And I'm just taking my shot. I think there's just very few bats. And the thing is, you know, he's coming back. When he comes back, even if you get 2 full weeks, I honestly, if he comes back by the end of the week, like they said, Friday was the potential for a return for Jung. They didn't really, like, when you look at how they talk about Heim was kind of like, hey, they gave him a date and he didn't really miss it. Garver was the one who got pushed back from his first date of return. But so the Rangers don't really play games with that stuff. He'll be back, I think, close to, if not Friday, probably Monday. So I'm looking at 2 weeks of Josh Jung. And the thing about that team is it's still the Rangers. They're still producing. And he's probably going to slot right back into batting fourth or fifth in that lineup. So you're looking at a guy who's going to enter a good lineup and hit in one of the best run producing spots in that lineup. And although the power might be sapped a little bit because it was a fractured thumb, it was, at least it wasn't his dominant hand. I believe it was his left hand. I know it's the lead hand, but it's not the dominant hand. So it maybe won't be as bad. Cause it was, it was on his glove hand cause it hit him in the glove. But yeah, so I went out and I felt confident enough to go out and get him. I think that if there's a difference maker, why wouldn't it be the potential AL rookie of the year, or who would have been the AL rookie of the year had he not got injured? But I don't know. I like Josh Jung down the stretch here. I think he's worthy of a grab, and I think he could be difference making for teams in the final 2 weeks. But I'm also saying this with a little bit of bias and optimism on my own. That's where I'm at with him. That's the reason why I went back after him and was glad to get him for a dollar, because I was surprised. But yeah,
I don't disagree with it. I was kind of curious on it. I'm just specking on guys right now are tough for me, but I get it. I get what you're saying.
I'm looking at anyone who could be a difference maker off the waiver wire right now. I'm betting on him just coming back and playing, because if he's back and he's playing every day. I don't think he gets a day off. That's another thing. So
you're getting some of these other guys. Yes.
So I'm looking at a guy who's entering one of the best lineups in baseball, or better lineups in baseball, not necessarily the best anymore. Entering the middle of that lineup, especially with Adelis out of the picture, that's one less spot ahead of him.
Let me just cut you off here. Let's just have some fun with this, because there's some other guys that are available. We already talked Jonathan India. Mm-hmm. Would you rather have picked up, if you could have one player this week in Fab, would you rather have Jonathan India, Josh Jung, or Davis Schneider?
I think Schneider comes in third, which is the
really,
yeah. But I'm also, I don't buy into
what Schneider,
maybe there's more. I don't have India on my team anymore, so there's no bias there. I'm betting on the ballpark being the kind of the differentiating factor. And we've already seen Schneider kind of fall down the lineup, no? Over yeah. the, like, yeah, I think
when,
today,
when Bichette came back, he moved down.
So, and then Chapman could be nearing a return. So then what happens when that happens?
You know when Chapman comes back, Schneider goes back to probably.
Well, there's no ETA on Chapman as a problem. So Chapman is, it's like, hey, he's ramped up activity, but that could be, it could be one of those like Chris Bryant type, like, hey, he's in suddenly. You don't know what's going to happen there. But regardless, I think Schneider is going to be third for me just because I don't believe in what we're seeing. I think we got the best out of him already. And I think he's going to come crashing back down to earth sooner than later.
That's fair. He's kind of doing the Zach Gelof path. Like, I believe in these guys long term, but I think teams are starting to find holes and now they have to figure it out type thing. Gelof's still very good. Gelof's still getting hits. He's just not what the power he once was.
And I think Schneider can still be a very solid player. I think he's going to be solid. But I don't know if I think, I don't know if he's going to be what India and Young can be down the stretch. If I have Schneider, if I'm dropping him for one of the two, it's probably India because he's already back.
Yeah.
But even then, how do you drop a guy who's putting up the numbers that he's put up this year? I mean, exactly. Schneider's not a drop. You're not dropping Schneider. I just think
I dropped Schneider right when he didn't play for a full week and then Chapman got hurt. That one stung. It was the right move at the time.
I agree.
Stings in a big way. Those moves will happen.
I dropped Kerry Carpenter and Jake Berger this year when they got their injuries.
Yeah, those will do it.
And then Berger missed minimum time, and it was an oblique. I didn't think minimum time was possible.
The fact he came back from the minimum time is pretty
Which is rare. From an oblique, rare. And then Kerry Carpenter, I just didn't prioritize because I never saw I didn't see the breakout in like the contact skills coming. I knew the power was there. Everyone knew the power was there. It was the fact that we've seen Carpenter put it all together and have what's been quietly like a really strong like four category year, like batting average, RBIs. Well, I don't know about RBIs and runs so much on that team, but you know, the rest of that. The home runs, and he stole five bases the last 30 days, which is all five of his steals on the year. So randomly started running it down the stretch here too. Carpenter's just been quietly a stud for fantasy. But anyway, so it's one of those things where your process will lead you to the right results sometimes, but other times dropping Carpenter Carpenter, maybe Berger was a little premature because I don't think we had enough.
The way oblique injuries happen, like
as soon as I hear oblique, I was like, all right, he's done.
It's rarely, if ever, the minimum. He, out of all people that prove you wrong, it's a beer league softball body got you.
And
I don't even know where my oblique is because of the way I look. Like Berger, I love Berger, but he ain't a small guy either.
he's closer to Vogelbach than he is to insert skinny man here. Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah, so I made that dry. And again, it didn't work out for me, but it's one of those things where I went with the usual oblique thing. Obliques usually like Josh Naylor was like 4 weeks. Like that's usually your lower end oblique fallout, you know?
Exactly.
But anyway,
one more guy I want to mention here, because then it just turns into a bunch of streaming type situations. Is if you want to jolt to your offense, Mr. Nelson Velasquez, everybody. I have him in every single draft and hold, I believe. I'd say at least 80% of them that I have. I love this guy. When he got traded, I was so happy. I said, give him playing time. He's got playing time. Since September 1st, he's playing every day. He's hitting .290, four home runs. Still strikes out a lot, but that's the Velasquez way. But the power is legit. Like, he's always had this. That was the thing that got me attracted to him. His Statcast numbers, 30% barrel, 55% hard rate. Not completely sustainable, but he's always shown good quality of contact metrics when he gets a chance. I love Nelson Velasquez. So he was a big-time pickup this week, like I mentioned. 45 leagues, as high as $12, as low as $1. I think when he slumps, it's going to be ugly. Like, there's no denying that with Velasquez because of the swing and miss. But when he's on and he's playing every day, I'm a big fan of his. I know you said he picked up one move, but was this a guy that was at least on your radar for the week?
Well, he's been rostered in 15s for a while, I think, is part of the issue with Velasquez. He's solid. He's the guy that I wanted. I kept grabbing last year for the Cubs. He would come up.
Hey, by the way, sorry, Royce Lewis just hit another home run. It's a hell of a platoon bat. Hell of a platoon bat.
My favorite. Yeah, Royce Lewis has been him, Nolan Jones, and McCormick have been league winners for me, at least. But let me get back to Nelson Velasquez.
I distracted you. That's my fault. That's completely my fault.
Don't worry, bro. Oh no, now I have to talk about both these guys. Anyways, so Velasquez, I'm only curious what's gonna happen. Isbell's back, right? You have Isbell, Waters, Velasquez, Melendez, and Olivares, and Blanco, who's getting run against lefties, so he's weak side platoon guy, but it's crowded, and it shouldn't be. Velasquez should play every day, but we've also seen them. Remember, right before this run, Velasquez was platooning against the weak side of platoon again. So I'm wondering, does that happen again down the stretch with all these lefty outfielders back in the mix? I don't think it should, but you gotta, it's the Royals. They do some stupid stuff, and it's funny though because this is normally Velasquez gets lefties, but this year. Small sample, but this year he's actually hitting righties better than lefties so far. So it'd be really funny if they suddenly platoon him, even though he's hitting righties really well. He has 1,000 OPS against righties this year. Like, you're not sitting that. 162 WRC plus against righties, Nelson Velasquez has. He shouldn't sit against righties, but normally the platoon split is the other way. But I digress. I agree. He's somebody you're definitely – the skill set is there. The loud, flashy tools are there. You always bet on that in the playing time, and usually you'll find a good solid streamer like down the stretch. He hasn't stolen any bases, hasn't even attempted a steal at all this year, for at least for the Royals, I should say. But or anybody. It looks like two teams, MLB, no stolen base attempts, which is weird because he did steal some bases in AAA this year. But regardless, it was a I like Velasquez, and I remember last year being in on him for the Cubs. He would come up, play against lefties, and then our injury would happen, so he'd get some run against righties, and then the guy would get healthy, so he would lose playing time. And so like, I was one of those things where I always had an eye on him, and I didn't get him this year. So, but I like him. I like the skill set. I'm just rambling at this point about Velasquez. But Royce Lewis. So yeah, it's one of those things where you want to know the difference between an overall winner and a team that's pushing to try to get back just the cash in the overall.
That's honestly, not be good, Royce Lewis.
It's a small sample. Because there's plenty of people that don't have them that are cashing in the overall and all that. But no, the small difference is when my team was top 10, top 15. Having Royce Lewis type production, having Royce Lewis type production from like McCormick and Nolan Jones, having those guys, those were extra guys. I didn't depend on them. Those were the guys that were putting me over the top to be a top 10 overall team and contending for the overall. When I got hit by the injury bug, those players became necessity to have, and they're the reason why I'm still even competing, honestly, right? They're the reason why I'm still winning my league or pushing for first place, or the reason why I'm still top 50 in the overall. But that's the difference in me being a top 10 team and a top 50 and a top 50 team, is the fact that health was the difference right there. It goes to show you that I made a ton of right moves this year. I made a couple of wrong ones, of course, but I made a ton of right moves. And unless you can run pure with your health, you're going to have a hard time winning the overall. The overall, there's some luck involved. The best players will tell you that there's some luck involved. Obviously there's a lot more skill than there is luck. Honestly, I really do believe that. But when I made so many right moves and I just got hit with terrible injury luck down the stretch paired with some bad performance, I still am making a push backwards the top. Now I'm going to come up short of my goal of being a top 10 team because of health. And I think that's a big difference. If I go look at those teams right now, they're top 10. I guarantee you a lot of them have big pieces that breakouts that they've drafted that just stayed healthy. And that's the difference between my team versus theirs, where I'm over here streaming six players from the freaking Athletics, Royals, and Tigers. They don't have to do that right now. You know what I mean? So
I'm with you. Like I said, about 2 months ago, I was winning at least half my leagues. Now the health bug has attacked me as well.
You have guys like Ohtani, big loss to a lot of teams on the stretch here, especially if he actually does end up injured on the IL, which I'm surprised that he
basically would have spent the whole 10 days on there already. We're almost there.
That's why the Angels.
But then again, after they've DFA'd somebody, who could they call up to fill the spot anyways? Tough move for the Angels.
Yeah, they don't really have a whole lot going for them right now. I get it.
Let's recap Fab real quick. You said you made one move, Josh Young. You said did you have anything else to add to that, or are you going to elaborate some more?
Real quick, the only reason why I made one move is because I'm trying. So I have $4 left.
Now
I have three. and we have two more fab periods. I looked ahead. I was like, Josh Young, there was like five players on my waterfall, and I would have streamed whoever I got. And if I didn't stream whoever I got, I planned on just, if I got Young like I did, I had a backup option. So I was never in need of a streamer, but I was like, I always like to at least get one streamer. I was looking at him like, who can I get for pitcher? I can't really go for a pitcher right now because I can't afford them not to be pitching the final week. So I was like, let me look ahead for more hitters. I don't know how the playing time is going to shake out by then or what's their matchup. So if I get a platoon bat, it's pointless to have a platoon bat for the stretch for the last 3 weeks because there's a chance that for the final week that they're only playing three of their side of the arm. You know, what if they have a weird week where it's like six games, three lefties, and they're a strong side platoon bat. So it's like I'm pretty much just keeping it very, very like I'm being very picky in particular with who I'm adding right now. Because I know, and I also want to be able to, like, the final week, if I can go this week right here and make no moves, I'm going to, because I want to be able to use $3 the final week. It's like, even if it's just $3 for one player, or if it's $3 for three streamers, because I need to fill holes, because, like, Lozardo gets shut down because the Marlins are out of it. And then next, you know, and then Logan Allen, who's my only starting pitcher on my bench, he ends up getting shut down because Leland's out of it. And then next thing you know, I still have Carlos Hernandez who I have to drop. So like he's been on my bench just because I have, but my point is
you can't afford to drop him. That's the shitty part.
I can't afford to just drop him for no reason. I can afford to drop him, but I can't at the same time because that involves a move. So it's one of those things where it's like I'm being very, very picky at my moves, but I'm also trying to make sure I set myself up for that final week where I'm not taking any zeros. I'm even keeping players that I know get strong side platoons that just like and hope that way I avoid taking zeros on my hitting side. I'm using my last $3 for like very, very specific needs or very, very specific holes to fill because of injury or whatever. And I've set myself up to, that's why I'm glad I didn't hold on to these guys on the IL, because although they're back now, I needed to fill those holes the whole time they were gone. Yeah. I couldn't afford to take any more zeros. I had to have bench depth, which so throughout the season,
worked out well.
So far, it's working out so far, but we'll see what happens. At the end of the day, though, there's a lot obviously that still happen. Now, the crazy part is in my league, not that anyone cares, or maybe someone does care because I find it very interesting and I think it can help. Maybe not, but out of the top five teams in the overall right now in my league, top five teams in the standings, I think two of them have $0 left.
So you were saying earlier, yeah.
And one guy has the hammer at $7. The hammer has $7 right now, by the way. That's the hammer.
That's a lot.
He's in third or fourth place. And then another guy has like $5. So and I have three. So the guy in second has no money. And I think the guy in fifth or sixth has no money. Or the fifth, I think, has no money. So it's like the guy in fifth might be SOL. The guy in second is going to have to get really lucky with injuries the rest of the season because, you know, all it takes is two injuries. Now he can't replace somebody in his lineup. And if you take a zero for 2 weeks, that can cost you greatly. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where it's like, at least I have money. So I might not have the hammer. I might not even have the second most money, but I can make moves, and that's kind of the important here. Now, I mismanaged Fab. I should have more money than this, but I'll take it.
We talked about that already.
I'll take it. Well, I stuck with my – if you look at my league, I kind of stayed on par with my league, at least, in terms of spending. So it wasn't like – having no money didn't completely screw me over because I was able to still make enough moves to be competitive because of how my league spent money as well. So
that's fair. All right, my Fab recap for the week, my first OC. There were 7 total moves made this week in that league. I made 4 of them. Not one of the moves had a backup bid. That's where we are. I had money to spend here. I think I had like $14. I spent $10 this week. I didn't think I was going to win all these guys. I just wanted to make sure I got them, though, playing matchups and whatnot. I need pitching counting stats. I picked up Ryan Pepio, $4, obviously the runner-up. Picked up Jordan Wicks in Coors. He's doing decent tonight. Picked up Lamont Wade Jr. because the Giants have 4 in Coors to end the week. And I picked up Bo Naylor because he's playing really good at catcher. And I dropped Sean Murphy. Everyone is like, oh, like this whole thing. The dude plays every other day. Going back to August 1st, he has 3 home runs. Like he's really doing nothing compared to other guys.
And that's part of my problem. I have 2 shitty catchers, excuse my language, but I have 2 terrible catchers, and I don't have money to play this streaming catcher game right now.
Oh, I've been doing it all along. I've been wanting to drop Sean Murphy for weeks, and I'm like, no, just wait. We're at that point. I'm not waiting anymore. I should have stopped, obviously, looking back, but all it took was one more injury to Darnold, and it was back to the glory days. But, yeah, we're back to platoon, and it's not working.
Yeah, I'm more so annoyed that I just don't have I didn't have the like Campisano's out there and I would have loved to get him, but
he was my backup.
I just couldn't justify spending 25% of my remaining budget on a catcher.
Yeah.
Cause technically I'm getting at bats there. I'm not taking zeros. I know it's not the best production, but it's production. That's how I had to look. I had to sit there and go back and forth. Langeliers with a home run tonight. Let's go. He's one of my catchers.
In my second OC, now there was a lot more moves made in this league. A lot more moves. So at least a little more entertainment. Side note, though, I tweeted this out earlier. This one player in our league will get healthy eventually. 3 moves they made, the 3 highest dollar value moves. They added Jason Dominguez for $200. Someone still had $200 left. Dropped Chris Bryant. The irony behind that whole thing is fitting. They added Taiwan Walker, dropped James Paxton for $71. And they added Leody Tavares, dropped Marcus Stroman for $50. $321 on Dominguez, Walker, and Tavares. Thanks for showing us you did not care this season. The moves I made, though, Jock Peterson, dropped Josh Rojas for $3, added Jonathan India, dropped Mike Moustakas for $3. I had a lot of money. I think I had like $24 somehow in this league. I must have been losing bids. Added Luis Matos for $2, dropped Will Benson, added Edward Cabrera for $2, dropped Matt Manning, added Jose Alvarado for $1, dropped Darius Fiennes. Alvarado starting to get some closing chances potentially, and he could be valuable in that final week of the season when starting pitching goes to hell. So that's an angle there. And then my final OC, the third one, I added Mike Yastrzemski, dropped Darius Fiennes 3-0, added Lamont Wade, dropped Josh Rojas 1-0, added Blake Sable, dropped Jason Dominguez 1-0, added Ryan Yarbrough, dropped Julio Urias 1-0, added Mason Miller, dropped Jojo Romero 1-0. I literally just putting out things into the wind, seeing if they'd hit. Those are not my top priorities, obviously, but Yarbrough and Miller are on my team now because I just didn't have more than a dollar to bid on these guys. Like Michael King went for $10 in this league with no runner up. Actually curious looking at these other leagues now. In OC2, Michael King went for $2. I could have probably had a chance there, unfortunately. And then in OC3, Michael King, he might have already been taken because I know he wasn't available in every league. So, yeah, it's the Wild West in those leagues. But one league, no runner-up bids, 7 total bids. Another league, a guy spends $300 this time of the year on a guy and drop and adds a guy that's out for the season and drops a guy that just came back and gets 14 games in Coors Field. And then the other leagues just pure chaos. So fun stuff all around. All right, Curlin, that's going to wrap up another episode of the show. Any parting thoughts as usual?
I got nothing. I'm watching this. I don't know why they're doing it. They're letting Woodruff pitch the complete game.
Hey, you know, those points leagues, head-to-head points leagues, get those complete game points just to really go over the top and prove why head-to-head.
They're winning 12-0, and they're letting Woodruff, I guess they don't have to worry about innings or pitch. I mean, he's still, okay, so he's about to be, that's probably about to be a stupid BABIP. Yep, that's a BABIP single.
And it was a broken bat. The bullpen got used a lot yesterday, too.
It was also a broken game. It was a broken bat bloop up the middle that never actually made it out of the infield. It was just too slow hit, and then Woodruff was like falling over and couldn't quite get it. So it doesn't matter. My point being is that it would have been whatever. It's a stupid hit that shouldn't have existed. But yeah, they better not score a run. I swear to God, they let him in for the ninth, and come on, man, come on,
anyway, come on, man.
I'm looking. I just wanted to see where my team, because 4 home runs, my team actually did decent tonight. Let's go. And I'm 41st overall. We're creeping. 41st, Bubba. We're creeping.
Don't call it a comeback.
I've only been here a year.
Yeah. All right. We're going to wrap it up there. Make sure y'all find Mike Curlin on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. I'm on Twitter at BDintric. Back with you guys next week to recap another week of Fab and get you ready for the final stretch run of the season and much, much more. Hope you guys have a great one. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 605. Catch y'all next time.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select 2 or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.